Kildare Focus with Kira Noble.
Hello, hello. You're very welcome in to Tuesday's edition of Kildare Focus with me, Kira Noble. It is the 7th of December. So what is it? 21 sleeps until Christmas Day? 22 sleeps? I'll take that. Joining me this afternoon is the Chief Executive of the Vintners Federation of Ireland on the new guidelines and regulations for the pubs. They met with government officials yesterday. We know the Cabinet is meeting today. Geraldine Herbert, the motoring journalist, will speak to us about the claims of rude testers of them not being allowed to cough. That's people who are taking their driving test and they're having to drive with the windows open due to the current pandemic. They're among the complaints received from people who failed their test recently. The coordinator of Christmas with Friends, Anne Crow, will join us. And there's going to be free Christmas dinners available to be delivered in County Kildare if you're an individual or couple living alone. The hot meals are prepared at Martinstown House over in the Curran. They'll be delivered to those in need by the volunteer drivers. So very much looking forward to that. Some Christmas cheer. Alex Cooney, the co-founder and chief executive of Cyber Safe Kids, she has an opinion piece on online regulation. She said that we must make sure that accountability is put in all the right places. And Jim Waldron is the spokesperson for the National Private and Hire Taxi Association, and the taxi drivers are calling for a promised fare hike to be implemented. Do get in touch with me this afternoon. The number to get me on 0833 97 97 97. The WhatsApp and text line are in association with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge. I hope you're safe wherever you are. I was just out at lunchtime there grabbing myself some food and I couldn't believe how windy it is. So I can only imagine how bad it is down south of the country. So do stay safe wherever you are. And if you have any updates for us, obviously get in touch on the text line I just said there. We also have the phone line that Cuiva's on at the moment. It's 045 901 490. And of course, as always, the email at studio at kfmradio.com.
Just playing great music. KFM.
Okay, we know new restrictions have come into place and the new guidance and regulations will be mainly in effect for those in the nightlife sector or working in the nightlife sector, I should say. The Chief Executive of the Vintners Federation of Ireland, Pádraig Cribben, joins me now this afternoon and I believe I have you on the line now, Pádraig. How are you?
I'm good, Kira. Yes, good.
Pádraig, we have heard from the Taoiseach that, you know, people are already asking about post-Christmas. These restrictions are currently in place and post-Christmas, what it may potentially mean. Now, we've heard that the Taoiseach has said that the nightclubs are to close in the bars and restaurants. They'll revert back to restrictions in place up until the 22nd of October. That was when majority of restrictions were lifted. They weren't even in place for 30 days before more restrictions were imposed. How are yourselves and others within the sector dealing with this?
Well, it's a pretty drastic and black time for the trade. December is always a very buoyant period for the pub trade. Essentially, what happens with Christmas parties and with socialisation, Christmas, the month of December is generally in the order of about the equivalent of about an ordinary, it's the equivalent of three times an ordinary month. So what publicans do in December is to pay some of the bills that are over from a bleak enough November, and they put some money aside to pay the bills for January and February, which can be bleak as well. So in the coming December, it looks like as if, you know, it'll get it hard to wash its own face, as it were, without putting anything by for early in the new year, which is going to be very traumatic and problematic.
Currently, as of today, what is in place to help sectors like yourselves?
What's in place today is there is a commercial rates waiver and there is a slimmed down employment wage subsidy scheme, which was slimmed down on the 1st of December. In the budget back on the 12th of October, the ministers indicated that they were going to slim down the employment wage subsidy scheme. And that was on the basis that everything would be fully reopened on the 22nd of October, 10 days later. At the time, we said that was proportionate. But in actual fact, what has happened is we've gone backwards from where we were on the 12th of October, not alone where we expected to be on the 22nd of October, but they have continued with the slimming down of the employment wage subsidy scheme. So in essence, even though that nightclubs are fully closed and the pub trade is very, very severely restricted based on the public health guidelines, and we are not, I have to emphasise, Kira, we have not quibbled at any stage with the public health guidelines. We've said that public health is paramount, but the supports have been dwindled back, and that's not acceptable.
Yeah, in fairness to a lot of people within your sector, Pádraig, they followed the guidelines, they followed the regulations, they understand, you know, the current situation we're in. We know with the Delta variant that reared its ugly head a few months ago. We know what an effect it had on the overall increase of cases. And now we have the new variant, the Omicron variant. And Micheál Martin did say that the government received, in quotes, stark advice from the National Public Health and Emergency Team. So I'm sure people like yourself within the sector can completely understand. But in saying this, majority of people who are going to pubs, or all people who are going to pubs and frequenting nightclubs, are going to be above the age of 18. And we do know a huge majority of those who were diagnosed with the virus in the past 2 months, since October in particular, have been those of primary school going age. So is it a bitter pill to swallow at times when you feel the balance still hasn't been hit? And may I just add, I'm sure it's very difficult for any government, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, to hit a balance when it comes to a pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a bitter pill to swallow when your capability to trade is significantly reduced. But, you know, we have become accustomed to that since March of last year. I suppose one of the things that is concerning, I could go so far as to say I'd use the word annoying, is that in relation to the nightclubs, when they were brought back to 12 o'clock trading, the chief medical officer basically said it would have very little effect on the actual spread of the virus, but it sent a message to the public. Now, I don't think it's fair to use any one sector to send a message to the public, particularly when the chief medical officer and the government combined have been sending quite mixed messages. And it's a bit galling this morning then to find out that from a contact tracing point of view, one of the key things that businesses have got to do is they have got to get the contact tracing details. But we're told this morning, I read in one of the papers, that the contact tracing on nightclubs is not actually being done. So if somebody has been in a nightclub and they turn out to be positive, the contact tracing details are not being used. Why? Because the people there are not at high risk, but at the same time, they've been closed because of the high-risk scenario. It is difficult enough to get one's head around that kind of mixed message.
So, Pádraig, have you asked the government, when you did meet officials, what the difference is, or can they not potentially see a difference, if they don't, maybe they don't, between the nightclub sector and those who are working in pubs and bars, etc.?
Well, I think the difference is that, you know, to quote Micheál Martin from his famous comment in the press conference after one of his speeches, yeah, people can do what they always did in nightclubs. And we won't get into the detail of that, but there is...
Why not,
Pádraig? There's, you know, I suppose the other thing that happens in nightclubs is you have dancing that you don't necessarily have in other outlets. You have much more close contact and much bigger numbers. So you don't have social distancing.
Okay. Yeah, no, look, a lot of things to consider, obviously, for government at the moment. You were mentioning the Christmas period in particular, such a busy time for yourselves in the hospitality sector. When it does come to January and February, how are you going forward? Are you expecting to kind of come in with a new marketing, I guess, plug, or whatever you may word it as, to get more bums on the seats during January and February, when hopefully these restrictions are lifted and people are able to be a bit looser with what they can do?
Well, I think the first thing we've got to see, and we said this yesterday to the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach and the various other ministers that we met, is that we've got to get out of this stop-start scenario. And we've got to try and find a reasonable long-term solution for the sector, because any time there is a slight movement or a significant movement in the numbers in hospital, in ICU, or indeed the daily numbers that we all look at, the immediate reaction is, oh, we better do something with hospitality. I think we've got to get away from that. We've got to find a mechanism and a level of activity that we can all live with. We need a plan. We need a plan that's going to be robust and that's going to be safe. But to talk about marketing plans, Ciara, I think it's way too early. We've got to see what the conditions are going to be like. We've got to see what level of trading we're going to have, because if you have very limited trading, it's not much point in spending money on marketing if you're going to be restricted in what you can do. So it will be very much a question of looking where we are in January, seeing what the prognosis is. We are being told that it looks like as if this is a winter virus to a certain extent. It's been a long winter since March of 2020 for most of our operators. So there's a lot to be taken into account when we see after the Christmas period where the future plan lies.
Okay, I just have a text in here, Pádraig, and I want to put it to you before you go. And it may be completely unfair in the way this person has worded it, but you're a publican yourself, so obviously it's aimed at the public.
No, I'm not actually a publican. I'm the chief executive of the representative body, but not a publican.
Oh, apologies. I thought you were a publican also.
Problem.
Apologies, Pádraig. Well, this person is asking about publicans increasing the price of pints before Christmas, as they do every year. Is there a reason behind this? Have you anything to add to that at all, Pádraig?
Well, first of all, it's not true to say that the price of a pint is increased every year before Christmas. That's absolutely incorrect. That's the first thing to say. The second thing to say is that we don't get involved in pricing. It actually would be illegal for a trade association to get involved in pricing. But the one thing I can say is that if you look at the dynamics of pricing, it's generally driven by cost. And if you look at the cost factors affecting the business, energy, light, heat, power, insurance, they have all gone up in recent times. So generally, when your costs go up, there's only one way of recouping it, and prices do tend to go up.
That may or may not
have happened, but certainly it's not a case of, you know, it's coming up to Christmas, we put the prices up. You know, the facts don't bear that out, because the price of the pint is recorded and sampled by the CSO on an ongoing basis.
Okay.
And there's nothing to indicate that happens in December each year.
Okay, so Texter, I hope you're happy with that comment and you've gotten some answer to it. The Chief Executive of the Vintners Federation of Ireland, I should say, Pádraig Cribben, thank you very much for joining us now. Good afternoon, Geraldine, motoring journalist. How are you?
Good afternoon, Ciara.
Some good advice for people anyway in terms of the car doors, Geraldine, and this terribly windy weather. But you're on this afternoon to speak with us about those who are failing their driving test over the past year or so, and the complaints from people who did so. One of the main complaints was to do with coughing, obviously in the middle of a pandemic, and having to drive with the windows open due to the pandemic. So exactly where do the driver testers stand in terms of what they can say to those who are taking their driving test?
Well, I suppose there's a certain amount of discretion there, Ciara. You see, the problem is there's always complaints. And you can imagine, I think they represent about 1% of all the driving tests. So I don't think that's too bad. Mind you, having said that, I suppose to go to the bother of actually making a formal complaint, you'd have to be fairly aggrieved. But these are kind of new ones. Now, you know, you do get things about, you know, testers being rude. But the COVID has obviously thrown in these extra ones now about coughing and wearing masks. And so, you know, I suppose you have to stay within the guidelines, and the testers are within their rights to impose certain things like that, you know, that you do wear a face mask properly, that the windows are open for ventilation. Coughing, I suppose, you know, it's become something you just don't want to do in public anymore. So I suppose that's an acceptable one as well. But as I said, like all of these things, there's discretion there as well, Ciara.
Yeah, now one of the things I noted was an individual complaining that the tester said if their face mask slipped, in quotes, a little bit from my nose while driving, the test would be ended, obviously meaning then you'd probably fail if you haven't gone through everything that you possibly need to go through to get a pass. But in saying that, if someone's wearing a face mask and they're doing everything they should be and it just naturally slips and, you know, the person is supposed to be keeping their hands on the wheel, wouldn't that then be the tester's fault for telling them that they need to put the face mask back on or else the test would be ended?
Yeah, like it's one of those things, Ciara. I suppose the onus is on the person who's doing the test to make sure that they have a properly fitting mask in the first place. I'm sure that's what the RSA or the tester would say. But having said that, as I said, there has to be some discretion because, you know, people don't, I'm sure this person didn't set out to actually, if they did, to have their mask slip or whatever. So as I said, you know, there should be some sort of discretion there. It's a really difficult one, though, to actually, if you do feel aggrieved about a driving test, to even appeal it. The appeals process is very, very complex. So I think probably it's easier to complain, to make a formal complaint, than to actually appeal. And that's probably why you get these, you know, you get these kind of random complaints.
Geraldine, what's the current situation with the RSA testing centres in terms of backlogs?
They are doing their best at the moment I think 9 months is what they're talking about, to actually get back to where they were. And it's very unfortunate, because before COVID, I think the average waiting time was about 6 weeks. Now, it always differs, as you know, Ciara, around the country, but I think that was the average time. But obviously, you know, I mean, it took a hammering during COVID, and then they were only doing tests for essential workers. Now, having said that, they did remain open longer than most European countries did in terms of testing. So they are getting back on track, but I mean, it is frustrating for people who are waiting for one. I might just say to people who are, though, Ciara, remember, you don't have to do it in your local test centre. You can do it anywhere. So if you can be flexible, and I know people think, oh no, I know the roads around my area or whatever, but if you can be flexible and you can, you put in for a cancellation as well, the more flexible you are, the more likely you are to get a test, you know, quickly.
Yeah, the only thing about that, as you just mentioned, Geraldine, a lot of people who are doing their test are obviously first-time drivers. You know, they're just getting their licence for the first time. Well, for obvious, they're getting their licence for the first time, but in the sense they haven't been on a provisional or you know, been practising for years or anything. So they've done the 12 tests or the 20 lessons or whatever it is, and they feel like they know that area the best and have their best chance to pass in that area. And that's the frustrating thing for people.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But remember, Ciara, once you get that license, you are then a designated driver that can drive anywhere in the country, nationwide and outside of Ireland and everything. So it really should be something that you don't get too hung up about, because if you're a competent driver and you should, you know, you feel that you've got to a stage where you can pass your test, you should be able to do it on roads that are unfamiliar as well. And I know that sounds really harsh, and I don't mean it like that, but really, you know, if you need a test in a hurry, be open to doing it somewhere else.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, Geraldine, if there was a new, thing to come in place that, you know, it's a lottery by where you end up doing your test. I wonder how many people would be passing then if they hadn't tried and tested the roads for the 12 lessons prior to sitting the test. But listen, that's another argument for another day. Thank you very much for joining me, Geraldine Herbert, a motoring journalist. Now, coming up after the break, we're going to be speaking with Christmas with Friends and Cyber Safe Kits.
Kildare Focus with Ciara Noble.
Now, the journal.ie's poll for today is, obviously it's a terrible day, and they're saying the weather outside is frightful due to Storm Barra, but have you decorated inside your home for Christmas? 1,989 people say yes, they've done so. That's about 47%. Then 30% of people say no, not yet. 14% of people say there's a few things up, and just under 7% of people say no, I won't be decorating. So have you got everything up? I know some people are very, you know, stringent. They only put up their decorations by the 8th of December, but like, I'd put it up in September if I could. But yeah, I don't have a tree yet. I do love a real tree. It always smells the best, so I need to get a tree soon. Now, sticking with all things Christmas, on the line this afternoon, I am joined by the coordinator of Christmas with Friends, Anne Crowe. Hi, Anne. How are you?
Hi, Ciara. How are you?
Thank you for joining me. I appreciate it. It's such a lovely initiative and service that Christmas with Friends does give people this time of year, obviously on Christmas Day. But if you're living alone here in this county, you can have a free Christmas dinner delivered to your door by the Newbridge charity that is Christmas with Friends. Just how can people go about in getting in touch with you guys, Anne, to get themselves a dinner on Christmas Day?
Okay, well, we've advertised it, Ciara, in as many places as we can. People can contact me on my mobile, 086-804-2724, or contact Damien Mullineau. Or people can contact the Lions Club in their local area. So it's really, I suppose, we're started out in Newbridge, but we're kind of a county-wide service since last year.
So literally, if you're, you know, in Leixlip, Athy, anywhere like that, a dinner will be able to be delivered to you on that day.
Absolutely.
Now, it's the 17th year of this project. And obviously, you're mentioning Damien Molyneux and yourself. Yeah. You are the two coordinators. And it's sponsored by Martinstown House and, of course, Newbridge Kildare Lions Club. Over 160 meals were delivered last year, which is actually phenomenal.
Absolutely. I suppose the whole idea of Christmas with Friends is really, it's a social event. And for 15 years, we got people together for dinner and for, you know, music and games. But last year, due to COVID, as this year, we can't get people together. So Martinstown House approached us and said, in their fabulous facility out there in Ballysacks, the Curra, they said that they would prepare and cook the dinner, and we got drivers to deliver the dinner. And this year they've gone, Martinstown House have gone a step further with their neighbours and their friends. They're actually sponsoring the event.
Now, Anne, if there's people listening and they would like to be able to deliver the meals to those who are either alone or in a couple and they don't want to be cooking for themselves on Christmas Day, how can they go about helping?
Well, if you want the dinner delivered to your house, you can just...
No, as in them. How do you deliver? Are you looking for volunteers to deliver?
Oh, yes, we are. We're looking. Well, and we do. I have to say we have volunteers who have been with us, you know, for a long number of years, and a lot of them have come back. But last year, I suppose, with 166 dinners, we did need more drivers. So if you have a couple of hours free on Christmas Day, contact us. And if we don't need to use you, we'll contact you and thank you and tell you we don't need you. But if we need you, then it'll be great if you're able to go out and deliver a couple of dinners.
And Anne, can they contact you on that same mobile number you gave out a little earlier?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. I will give that out again later in the show just so people do remember it. And just to finish up, in terms of booking the delivery, the way to do it is the mobile as well?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, perfect. So if you are somebody who's at home this Christmas, we know obviously with restrictions back in place in the Omicron variant, people are probably going to be a bit more worried and may actually choose also to stay at home this Christmas. And if there are one or two people and you'd like to see a friendly face on Christmas Day, do phone Anne. That number is 086 804 2724. You can book a delivery. And also if you'd like to volunteer, and as Anne said, if they do need room for anybody, they will obviously get back in touch with you. Anne Crowe, you are the coordinator of Christmas with Friends, and I will give out that number again a little later in the show. Thank you so much for joining me. Anyway, moving on, I am joined now by the co-founder and the chief executive of Cyber Safe Kids. That's Alex Cooney. Good afternoon, Alex.
Good afternoon.
Now, it's a very interesting opinion piece you have on online regulation. You have said that we, as in the general public, must make sure that accountability is put in all the right places. What do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, this is about the online space. And if you think of any other area of our lives, it is regulated. And particularly when we talk about children and children in the offline world, you know, we treat them differently because we believe it's in their best interest to do so. Whereas on the online world, they're treated as equals, as adults. And we need to create or put in place, let's say, the guardrails to ensure that they have a safe and positive experience online and that their best interests and that their rights are upheld.
In fairness to anybody, social media is addictive. We know this. But if we take children as the example, they, by and large, follow a lot of what their parents do. And there are many people, they're human out there. As I said, it's addictive, social media. Parents who may be on their own Facebooks for hours. You noted the 6-hour Facebook outage in the first line of your article. We know that happened, I think it was the 3rd or the 5th of, no, it was the 4th of October, I believe it was, the evening of the 4th of October, this happened and the whole world went mental. So if a kid is watching their parent every single day, you know, using their own Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, then it's no surprise they themselves will be doing the same.
Right. And I think we have to realize that it's designed to be that way. You know, our attention is what they're after. And, you know, there are plenty of design mechanisms in place to ensure that our attention is held, you know, and it's really difficult. Like I struggle sometimes when I'm on social media to put the phone down, to put it away. So, yeah, of course, we do need to think about our own behavior and the messages that we're given. And if we're constantly engrossed in the screens of our devices, you know, then that sends a particular message, especially to young kids who perhaps before they're even have their own device. You're giving the message that there's something so intriguing on the screen that they must want to have a look too. So I think we do really need to be aware that this is the case, that they are designed to hold our attention. That Facebook outage, I think, really highlighted just how dependent we are. And, you know, people desperately refreshing their feeds, headline news around the world. It was incredible. And it was just 6 hours.
Yeah, literally, it was just six hours and we couldn't even cope. But you're mentioning obviously the adults and stuff. If I look at my parents' generations, they obviously didn't have Facebook, etc. when they were younger. But I did from before I even turned a teenager. Social media was everywhere. So it is quite difficult, I guess, for people of my generation and younger when they themselves have kids to try and pave this new path that has never been put before them. And they've had no, I guess, life without it that they can properly remember.
Well, this is it. And I think for parents in particular, it's a real challenge. You know, we're parented on so many aspects of our lives, you know, like riding a bike, crossing a road, learning to swim. All of these things, we know how to parent our children on it because we were parented on it. Whereas the online world represents this kind of new frontier. And, you know, added to the complexity is that it is not a regulated space or is largely unregulated. And children are essentially treated as adults unless they're in a child-specific environment. So you've got all these challenges in place. And we need to support parents so that they know that they're going to have to engage with their kids. They're going to have to support them in much in the same way that they have prepared their children for other aspects of their lives. They will need to do so for the online as well. That's so important. But it's not all on parents. And it really, you know, there is a real onus on the tech companies themselves to ensure that those online environments that children are accessing have appropriate safeguards in place. You know, it's that is a really important aspect of this conversation of what I was trying to say in the article. Mm. You know, that they are the ones that are benefiting enormously from all of our time spent online, children, adults, whoever. We are, you know, they are earning billions and billions of dollars in some cases, you know, because of it. So, you know, we need to ensure that they are accountable, that the regulation is in place. And this is why this bill, this Online Safety and Media Regulation Bill, and the campaign that we're part of, the 123 Online Safety Campaign, which is led by the Children's Rights Alliance. You know, this is what it's about. It's making sure that we get the regulation, but not only that, that it's good regulation, that it will make a difference, that it does protect and uphold and rights in the online environment, and particularly for the most vulnerable, which obviously includes children.
Yeah, obviously you posed that question in this article, and that is the €1 million question, like who's accountable for it when things go wrong for a child? Is it the online platform? And if it's both, you're mentioning, you know, the parent or the guardian and the online platform, where's the balance then? Say if something does go terribly wrong and legal cases were taken, etc., etc. You know, when it comes to anything legal, it's all about balancing people's rights, constitutional rights, you know, right to privacy, you know, right to the truth, etc., etc. How would something like that be balanced if it would then be on both the shoulders of the parent or guardian and the social media platform?
Well, again, I think we have to look to other places to see what, you know, what the precedents are. If you look at something like road safety, you know, we've established a road safety authority through legislation, you know, that has certain powers, you know, that run public awareness campaigns, that, you know, monitor road usage and safety. We give support to schools so that they can reinforce those messages, you know, that children are getting this information in schools. And, you know, and obviously then there's a role for parents as well in actually teaching their children the rules of the road and how to be safe on the road and so on. So there is responsibility allocated in various areas. But, you know, there is legislation there at the end of the day for when things go wrong that the right thing can be put in place. Sorry, I'm just tripping over my words. So I think we need to look to other places to see what the models are. But it does, that obviously we need the legislation. Now, this year we passed COCO's law, which puts in place penalties for people who share intimate images, either with consent or without, or knowingly or unknowingly, kind of with or without consent. So, you know, it is, we are starting to put in place legislation to protect users. But it's long overdue, and we definitely need more robust measures to ensure that we're holding these online platforms to account. And we need to support parents. So we need public awareness campaigns. We need proper education. We need, you know, we think that digital literacy should be the fourth pillar of the education system because children are so much online. You know, they largely see it as a really positive space. It's a place where they meet their friends. It's where they engage with their friends. You know, there was a report out in 2019, so this is pre-COVID, it was the Children's Mental Health Report, and it found something like 81% of children said it was, you know, an incredibly important part of their social lives was meeting them in the social media space. So it's not all negative. It's about making sure that wherever young people are, wherever children are, that we've got the right measures in place, that they've got the support, and that they can have a safe and positive experience, and that they can be protected from some of the kind of more inappropriate content as well. So there's interesting discussions going on in the UK around children's access to pornography, for example. And we need to be having those conversations here too.
Now, Alex, it's a really interesting piece. If people, especially parents, want to read the opinion piece, obviously, that Alex has written here, it's about online regulation. Where can they go about seeing it and reading it for themselves?
Well, it's on social media. I believe it's been published in a couple of the regional newspapers. So I think Waterford News is carrying it today. We've got it on our Twitter account. The Children's Rights Alliance have got it there as well.
Great.
And there's plenty of information both on our website and also the Children's Rights Alliance website, the 123 Online Safety Campaign.
Okay, great. And we'll also publish it on our website, kfmradio.com, this afternoon. Alex Cooney, the Chief Executive of Cyber Safe Kids, thank you so much for joining me.
Kildare Focus with Kira Noble.
Taxi drivers are calling for a promised fare hike to be implemented. Joining me now is Jim Waldron. He is a spokesperson with the National Private and Hire Taxi Association. Good afternoon, Jim.
Hi, Kira. Nice to talk to you again.
Nice to speak with you too. So the industry is saying that the rising cost of fuel, as we know, has absolutely skyrocketed, is one of the main reasons for the call. Do tell us more.
Yeah, we're looking for this to be implemented as soon as possible as an interim till a review, which is now going to be started by the National Transport Authority, takes place. Our estimation is this could take up to 6 months. And we're looking back to 2019 when a fare review was carried out then and a 4.8% figure was approved as a fare increase based that the taxi cost had increased by 5% or thereabouts from 2017. So since 2019, we've been operating at that 5% loss for a start. Now, obviously, since 2019, a lot of things have happened, including the fuel prices going up and the added costs, and drivers obviously getting less fares. So to run a taxi now has vastly increased, and we can't really wait for 6 months for the National Transport Authority to complete the review. We're calling on them to implement what was approved in 2019 until the review has been completed.
And Jim, how is it for people like yourselves that are hearing about the nightlife sector? Obviously, the restrictions coming in, meaning that there won't be as many bodies looking for taxis this time of year like there usually would be. So incredibly popular this time of year.
Yeah, well, you're right. I've heard on the radio weddings being cancelled, functions being cancelled, Christmas parties. You know, these could be, you know, 80 or 100 people going into a room and they all come out then at midnight or whatever and they'd be looking for a taxi home. Well, they're obviously not going to be going into the room now and they won't be looking for a taxi. So we're affected very severely with the drop off in people. And even in the last, maybe 8 weeks ago or so, drivers were speaking positively, things were starting to pick up, and then the recent announcements then just dampened the whole spirit down again. And, you know, taxi drivers not looking forward to Christmas. On one base, there isn't enough work out there, and obviously we're not earning enough money to pay for our own Christmas.
Now, just, you know, you're mentioning not enough work out there. Obviously, I'm not going against what you're saying or anything, but about a month ago, the Irish Examiner were reporting that the number of licensed taxi and hackney drivers did decrease for the first time in 3 years in 2020. So it had decreased for the first time since 2017 in 2020. How did you hear, how did you feel, I should say, hearing that?
I'd contradict that in a sense that in April 2017, there were 17,167 licensed vehicles. Very recently, in November, there's 18,918 vehicles. Now, there are 25,000 valid licenses. 6,000 guys have not come back to work. And I would suggest to you they're not coming back to work because there's not enough work for them. And in one way, been very selfish, one driver might say, oh, if he's not working, that's more for me. But if he's not working, he's relying on a PUP payment or he's gone unemployed. And that's not good for anybody, let's be honest about it. So, you know, the only time that there seems to be an acknowledgement that it's difficult to get a taxi is at closing time in the pubs, generally speaking. And at any other time, You could probably get a taxi within 3 minutes, I'd say.
Okay, look, it's very interesting. And yet again, another sector that's going to be greatly affected by the restrictions that have come into place from today, and they will last until the 9th of January over the Christmas and the New Year period. And people like yourselves, Jim, won't be having as many bodies in the car over the next few weeks. But thank you very much for joining me. I know you're off for to collect a fare at the moment, so Jim needs to head off there. And thank you, Jim. Really appreciate it. Now, I have a texter in here, and unfortunately, texter, I don't have your name. La la la. No, I don't, unfortunately. But they have said, dread to think what taxi fares will be now. I got a taxi long before COVID from Suncroft to Newbridge, and it was €20 in and out. Was told it would be 25 if I came back after midnight. Yeah, Suncroft to Newbridge. Yeah, I know. Crazy. I mean, I've gotten many taxis from Newbridge to Naas, and it's cost me between 20, €25, which is actually so expensive when you think about it. But thank you, texter, for getting in touch. And before I go, we were speaking with the coordinator of Christmas with Friends, Anne Crowe, a little earlier on. So what they're doing is, people who are living alone in County Kildare, or if you're in a couple and you don't want to cook this year and you're at risk of social isolation over Christmas, you can have a free Christmas dinner delivered to your door by the Newbridge charity. So you can get in touch by calling the number 086 804 2724 to book a delivery. And Anne would also love to hear from anybody who would be willing to help with deliveries. So that information will also be up on our website, kfmradio.com. Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. Thank you, as always, to Caoimhe Harney and Owen Beattie. And I will speak to you guys again tomorrow. Have a lovely evening. Stay safe and cosy and away from that storm.
Kildare Focus with Ciarán Noble.